And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared here on Declare Your Independence. I'm here in the Stancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA Youthful Studios of Phoenix.com. All right, what we're doing today, Yasik Spindle is in, you know, from, the Arizona, Project Arizona. ProjectArizona.us. We've been talking with Yasik over the years when he was one of the students that had been coming in. And go ahead and give him that big mic over there and put that over there. Yeah, right there. You pick it up. You move it over there. Boom. Then what we're going to do is for this hour, Yasik brought in three of his students that he brings. I'm going to have him tell us all about it. He's the founder and president of the Freedom and Entrepreneurship Foundation. He is also European Programs Director at U.S.-based Language of Liberty Institute. Now, Glenn Kripe. That's what I was trying. I was trying to remember his last name before in the first hour. I'm going, Glenn, what's it? Oh, yeah, Glenn Kripe. Now I remember. All right, Glenn Kripe, Language of Liberty, as you know, he's a retired financial guy that went, kind of, you know, I'm going to go free the planet because I can. Well, I think he was from Croatia or Serbia or where was he from? Yeah, well, he had a grandfather that is his family, you know, from back in the day. That's why he wanted to go free them, you know, get them language of liberty stuff.
Eastern Slovakia.
Slovakia, that's what
he was already born in the United States.
Yeah, but he had roots back into Europe, and he wanted to, you know, what the hell, I'll go there because I can go there. So it started there. He started having students, and it's in English. You know, the second language. These guys, they all speak English. I don't know if we're going to find out how well, but, you know, they all got their own stories, and it's just awesome. We may do this again after we get back. It might be a month. When do these guys leave?
Oh, in mid-April.
Oh, so we got time. Bring the mic closer to you.
Okay.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we have the first three here from different places, and I'm going to have you introduce them. Say, yo, what's up? We'll get to say hey to each one of them and have them give their story, because this is a really interesting project that when you were a student, you were so inspired and you just liked Arizona, that you came up with this project to do the same thing for others. So go ahead and tell the audience what you're doing and why.
Hi, good morning. Great to be back at Freedom's Phoenix here at Ernie's Place. We love to be here. So my name is Yacek, as you know, and I am for, I don't know, seventh time maybe in my life in Arizona. I love it here. And visiting Glenn many times, I fell in love in Arizona, and the people and the spirit of liberty that is still here. And I want to start a project that will introduce young leaders who are dedicated to freedom around the world, especially in developing countries, to this Arizonan vision of freedom. So they come here for around 3 months and they learn how do you defend and advanced liberty here. They have internships. They go to ASU for classes about U.S. history and free market economics.
Lies! All lies!
There are some professors who are good.
They're getting better because we're calling them liars. But anyway, they get better. But in comparison, we'll talk about this. We'll talk about this. Because a lot of times over the years, you've had people come on and they're going, they'll look at some of the regulations or laws here in America to go, you got to get a permission slip for that? What the hell are you guys? You call yourself free? You know, so it changes. There's some inconsistencies here.
There are, but
on the whole, a lot better.
That's true. Still a lot better. And these institutions guarding freedom, they're still strong. I mean, you have a lot of think tanks, you have a lot of educational places, you have like even attorney defending liberty. I mean, Mark Victor and Attorneys for Freedom. You have a really strong team for liberty here. And my students, they intern with some of these people. They have classes. They have a lot of networking meeting with successful entrepreneurs.
Anybody at Mark's firm
yes,
this year?
Yes, yes. We have Kamala from Nepal. She's actually
from Nepal. She's
right now interning. She is not an attorney. She's an economist, but she's still very useful for.
They have economists in Nepal.
They do. Amazing. Free market economists. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Wow. Tell me how, before we get introduced in the next segment yeah. We'll start talking to the guys here, but how are they selected? How do they know about it? From Nepal, how the heck did that happen?
Right. So this is the third time we do Project Arizona. The first one was in 17, then 18, now we have 2019, and it's getting more and more successful. That way, more and more people hear about that. That's word of mouth, that's Facebook, that's social media, that's the Liberty Network called Atlas. That help us to spread the word. So at the beginning, we had more people from my own country, Poland. You remember in the first year, we had 4 out of 6 from Poland.
Yeah, they all got stopped at the border with the gun pictures on their Facebook. I get it.
They did not, but luckily.
Well, my thing is that, you know, whatever. I just warning, it's not not everywhere is the same as America, you know. So
it's true.
Especially Arizona.
So now we have, again, 6 students, but all from different countries and actually 4 continents. We have, maybe I introduce the 3 of them.
We'll do that in the next segment. But I want to
I tell you the countries maybe first. We have Mexico, Venezuela. We have Poland, Ukraine, Russia, and mentioned before, Nepal. So very, very interesting country.
Yeah. So my question is, how in the hell did Nepal even know? How did from Mexico even know you're out of Poland?
Nepal.
How?
Well, you mentioned Glenn Kripe, Language of Liberty. Yeah. We do these liberty camps. We still do a lot of them. We were basically in Nepal in the summer. And we had 2 camps in Biratnagar and Dulikel, near Kathmandu. And we met a lot of awesome students.
So Glenn's still busy going around the
busy. He just came back from Uganda. Can you imagine?
No.
This time is for Africa.
Well, we've had guys from Algeria, Nigeria, you know, the Monaco. I mean, it's amazing. You know, Glenn knows a lot of people, and whenever they visit Arizona, they come say hello.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times, you guys done the shooting thing yet with this crowd?
No, but February 23rd is our first shooting day.
Oh, where are you going?
We go to Casa Grande for the range, which is open for public.
Oh, you guys all excited?
Yeah.
No, you know, this is what happens. Women, when they finally shoot an AR-15, it doesn't kick. It's like a BB gun. They think it's going to go, poof, and they go, that's it? I can project my will 100 yards that way and do the ping, ping, ping. It's pewing. I pewed it. Pew, pew, pew. You know, and they go, woohoo! Man, they're all excited every time. I swear, you'll find out. You'll go, man, that was cool. So they always get scared going, and it's nothing.
No. That's true. In previous project, there's not girls were always the most excited.
We will be the most excited.
And the girls from Ukraine are almost the most excited.
That's
true. Yeah, well, that was one thing. When I talked to a lot of the people, when we've talked to them, we'll get to you guys here. You know, we'll go in the break in just a little bit. But when I talked to them, you know, what was your best experience? A lot of them, or at least it's in the top 3, was the shooting. It was, and it's not so much because they got to shoot. It's one, it dispelled a lot of myth. They were like, you know, it wasn't what they thought it was going to be. It was fun, but it represents so much freedom that is denied them in their countries a lot of times. The fact that you are even able to own and shoot a firearm, it's not like we don't have enough desert, you know, and they go, wow, this is, it's just a whole different mindset. You're like free to shoot. Oh my God. You know, it's a whole different mindset. We're going to get their stories when we come back. You know, Maria, Andrea, and what? Christoph. We're going to get to say hello to each one of them, and we'll go along today, whatever. We'll have fun, and Maybe Donna will give us some smoothies. We'll be right back.
Okay.
From the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the Crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the Crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the Crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The Crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the Crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation. A difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the Crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The Crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the Crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the Crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Heat is on! Okay, this is what we're doing. Okay, I'm going to have Maria go ahead and... Campanos, is that you? You're from Ukraine?
I'm from Ukraine, yeah.
Okay, wait, I got to push a button. Here we go, yeah. Here we go. Okay, so go ahead and tell me your story. You know this about that because, and you've heard about, and you're here, and why, and because, and everything. Go.
Okay, so, hi there.
Hello.
The thing is, this year I spent some time in Germany. I've been working there as a journalist. I'm a journalist, actually. And like after every travel, I understood how much I learn in every country. And I decided, you know what? I write in English. I'm a journalist, English writing journalist. And I thought, like, it's time to actually see the country I'm writing for, you know? So I came here.
So your English journalism in English is about America?
It's about Ukraine, poor Americans, you know? Like, usually people from the U.S. read about Ukraine. So that's the thing. And I came here, I wanted to learn what it's like, what Americans are talking about, how they express their emotions. I did. Roads are too wide, as for me, I have a heart attack every time I cross a road. But actually, I like it.
How long have you been here?
A week, by the way. A week.
Oh, this is only a week, Jacek? You guys?
10 days.
Yeah. 10 days.
All right.
All right. So you come in here, and what was your first impression? You go, hey, it's not snowing.
No, my first impression was is people are very outgoing, and actually, I adore that. You know, like people in the cafe would start talking to me, I would respond, and we'll have a chat, and then you know, it's just nice. As I was saying, the only thing that surprises me very much is like, why cars are so big? Why are they so big?
I know why.
Why?
Because they can.
Because why not?
Because they can. We got a big American car. We got a big car.
But I like it, you know. Generally, I like it very much. So English is the accent is hard, actually, in the U.S.
What, you understand from somebody like United Kingdom better than Americans?
I prefer someone from Ukraine speaking English, but you know, you can choose.
Well, this is one thing that we found out from when Jacek, you know, I think you were part of the first crowd, weren't you? Were you the first crowd?
No, I actually founded this project, so...
No, not this one. I mean Language of Liberty, when Glenn Pratt...
Yes. I was a student at his very first camp in 2007 in Slovakia, yes.
Yeah, no, so this is, man, you've been from the beginning of this thing, and then, of course, you start, you go, hey, I can do this, man, let's go have some fun. I have some excuse to stay in America. I like America.
Right.
You know, and then you and yeah. fell in love with it. Now, your wife's name?
Magda.
Magda?
Magda.
Yeah. Now, was she a student also, or was she your partner before and came with you later, or?
She came to a conference, libertarian conference that I organized in Poland. We had a so-called Freedom Summit in Poland, and she came as a participant. That's how we met.
Now you said, yo, what's up?
Yeah.
You said, hey, you want to go to America?
Yeah.
You know? Magda, I love her. She's a great person. I'm glad you guys got married and have everything cool. She here?
Yeah, she's here. She maybe can come next time.
Yeah. Especially. I don't need you. I need her. So there you go. So, well, you guys are the traveling between Europe and here. Is that a
yes,
problem?
Yes, all the time. No, it's not.
Pretty easy?
It's good. We spent the beautiful months here in the winter, which is... so much
okay,
better than in Poland.
That's one thing I want to ask.
We are snowbirds, right?
Yeah, see? That's why I asked Maria. Okay. You come here and the environment, we're looking at, you know, Arizona, you know, landscape. Is it totally, what you expected?
Totally different. Oh, my God. You know, it's such a pleasure. So on my first day, I went to the swimming pool. And then this man, at the university, he said, it's too cold. And I was like, it's too cold? Seriously? It's not too cold. It's amazing, you know? We have snow now in my country. And I'm like, I'm here and very, very happy about that.
Now you're going to go back with a tan, whether they like it or not.
Oh my God, I want a tan. But it's... I have no idea.
Okay, so what are you writing while you're here? What's your internship? Or what are you doing for work?
So
or
I'm working for interning for Arizona Talks. It's a... organization that they organize events basically, and so far we had one event yesterday, so it was a very good experience. But me,
don't bang the table, it okay, transfers sorry. To the mic.
And I'm usually involved in doing videos, editing videos, taking photos, you know. So I'm doing kind of this editing job.
Editing videos, I got a job for you.
Okay, just tell me about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. I've been looking for a job, man. I got somebody to do, I got jobs. You know?
Okay.
So we'll work it out.
So far, I like this place so much that I can find a job. I would love to.
Yeah, no, if you're competent and you got, you know, and I tell you, it's like anywhere else on the planet. You're reliable, dependable, do what you say, you know, say what you do, do it, and kind of, you know, we're good. Boom. You know?
That's what I like about America. So
no permission slip from the man. Well, Ukraine, is it getting more and more Western? Is it, you know, is there still a lot of tension over Russia and Croatia? I mean, in Crimea, what the heck is
Crimea.
It?
Crimea.
You know, Crimea and stuff, is it ouch, quit it, and like what we're seeing in the news here, or nobody cares?
Well, everyone cares, at least in Ukraine, just because it's our country. And basically, we have a war, and I would...
So it's in the it's ongoing, there's tension there.
There's tension there, and
really?
The thing is, we try to fix it, but it's hard. And usually, here, people say different things, but just to make sure... My point is, it's still very hard, people still dying, and I became a journalist in 2014, right after the war started, because it was such an impression for me. Because imagine, believe it or not, but I thought that my life is no different from life of like any average American. You know, we have like TV, we drive cars, and when the war started, it was like two worlds collapsed. Because at one point you have, I think that the city I live in is pretty nice. I live in the capital, and I had all the privileges of any European person. You know, and then you hear that in your country someone is dying. But the thing is, I think that's why Americans are kind of blessed in their unawareness of how unstable the life around can be, you know?
I think it's common.
Well, still, you have the stability we do not have, and that's a privilege.
I think it's going to get unstable. But, I, you know, we take it for granted.
Maybe at some point.
You know, it's going to be, and you go... you think this is unstable? You know, I remember when I was young, I was in my early 20s, I was in New York City, and I was at a Christmas party. And this is when, you know, the Cold War is at its peak and Russian dissidents, you know, escaping, coming political, you know, refugees here and whatever. And there's a young guy who's in his 20s and he goes, yeah, you guys, and we were having economic problems in the first part of Reagan's administration. And, you know, there's some economic problems. He goes, you guys don't have problems. And I go, yeah, how do you know? And he goes, because you still have pigeons. He goes, when it gets bad, these pigeons wouldn't be here anymore. We'd be hungry.
Wow.
So I'm going, all right, there's that, you know. So
cruel joke, but it makes sense.
No, it makes absolute sense. I'm going, well, man, if I'm hungry, that pigeons, I got a bunch of doves back here, keeping my chicken feed. I'm going, man, you done, man.
Well, you know, we still have pigeons. Thanks God for that. You know, we still have them. We have, like, other kinds of problems, but still.
So you don't have problems. You got pigeons.
Well.
Huh. All right. Well, I'm glad you're here and you're having a good time. And what we'll go ahead and do is we're going to go ahead, and Andrea, you know, we're going to talk to you, Andrea, you know, here next from Mexico, you know. And we're going to get her whole story. And we'll go along today. We'll make sure we get introduced to everybody. And Jacek's going to help us. We'll be right back. It's the ProjectArizona.us. We'll be right back.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
As you brush your shoes, you stand before your mirror, and you comb your hair.
Well, it's fun here to declare your independence. All right, this is what we're going to do. Now, it's Andrea's, I'm probably pronouncing your name wrong. Andrea Hernandez, Andrea, I'll get the accent right. I got to go from, you know, Ukraine to Russian to Poland. God, man, I'm jacking it up here. All right, go ahead and introduce yourself and say hello.
Hi, thank you for giving us the opportunity to be here today with you.
Okay, you got to really speak up. Yelling. Well, I'll tell you, switch. It's a microphone. Okay. It's not you. Go ahead and switch that microphone. Make it a lot easier on her because, you know, different channels do different. There you go.
Okay. Thank you for give us the opportunity to be with you today. My name is Andrea Hernandez. I'm from Mexico City. I finished my bachelor in international business last semester. So I'm here in Project Arizona with Jacek, and I'm really happy to be here.
But how did you even know about it? Was there an event they had in Mexico City?
Well, I'm going to tell you my my story. When I was on studying international business, I met some amazing people from Students for Liberty, and we started to make projects in our university about libertarian ideals. And, you know, I think that at least in Mexico, there is really, really important to make to create new leaders, because we need, like, new business people that has the ability to introduce new brands in our country. That's what Mexico needs. So that's why I'm here. I met Arizona project for Students for Liberty in Mexico.
Well, this is, so you were at Students for Liberty there. They had a thing, Jacek. What was going on?
Students for Liberty are helping us in a way. They do spread the word that we have a recruitment for Project Arizona, and that's how a lot of freedom-leaning students learn about this project in the first place.
So let me ask Andrea. You know, so you saw what, a printed material? They had a booth. Somebody came up and tapped you on the shoulder and said, "What's up? We need you to go America." I mean, you know, how did that happen?
No, actually, I saw the information on internet. They sent me an email from Project Arizona.
So you had their database?
Yeah. From Students for Liberty.
I asked the Students for Liberty leaders to send out information about us in their own newsletter.
Okay, now how many?
So she got a newsletter, I think.
Okay, so how many applicants did you have for this crop of, how many are there, six, eight? How many are there?
There's six, and I got around 100 applicants. around 100 applications.
Well, Andrea, what made you stand out? You know, you could do a bunch of push-ups or something. I mean, why'd you get picked, you think?
Well, I think that in Mexico, I might have different projects. For example, I have my own non-profit organization to help the young people to create their own projects for the community. For example, right now we are organizing a race for next July that is going to recollect money for people with Down syndrome. And we create these kind of projects, and we try to help them to be more active in the community and spread the ideas of liberty.
So using the Down syndrome event to spread the ideas of liberty to a wider audience? Or
yeah. Well, the name of the race is Liberty and Humanitarian Help. And yeah, it's for both, for spread the ideas of liberty and help the community.
All right. Now, this does it need to be spread in Mexico? I'm leaving Monday to go to an Acapulco. We're going down to Acapulco. It's a big, you know, anarchist event that's, you know, have, I don't know, 2,000-4,000 people there. Last year it was like 1,600 people. You know, Ron Paul will be speaking, you know, and a bunch of other guys and so on. I spoke there
hi to them from us, from Project Arizona.
Well, give me freaking stuff, and I'll pass that stuff out, man. Oh, you know, Mark spoke down there. We met Alessandro Fusillo. We got to hang out with him. He was a speaker.
He's great. Yeah.
So there's, you know, there's a lot of, in Mexico, we have friends that are starting to move down there because they think they're freer. Now, you don't want to be, you know, competing with the cartels. That'd be bad. But, you know, so what do you think is needed in Mexico? What's the mindset change that needs to happen?
Well, first, I think that in Mexico, they don't even know how about the liberty ideas. It's crazy because we need them in Mexico. For example, you know that in Mexico is one of the most dangerous places to be a parodist.
Dangerous places to be what?
A journalist, to be a journalist.
A journalist, okay. Yeah,
it's really, really difficult.
Yeah, don't hit the table. I got to put something underneath that. I'll get Donna get a towel. Donna, get a cushion for this mic. You know, because they're expressing themselves.
Yeah, and I think, for example, I studied international business, and I didn't know about libertarian ideas until the end of my bachelor's. It's incredible. We are studying that, and we don't know what it is. The free market.
What do you think? Mike's really sensitive. It has to be pointing right at your mouth there. You're going to pull that cable up so it doesn't do that. There you go. Now, the one thing that I'm wanting to make sure that we know is where do you think you are now? You know, when you talk libertarian or liberty, because we've had writers that, you know, are from Mexico. We got long history of people from Mexico that we've been dealing with, and even Venezuela. But there is this mindset of what a libertarian, now they call it liberal, okay? Mm-hmm. A liberal is a libertarian from your perspective, you know, what you're talking about. And sometimes, like University of Monterey is a little bit more libertarian-oriented. You know, where is the core? Is it from the internet? Is there some, you know, rock star that's out there going, woohoo, I got an anarchist on my chest and I take my shirt off and show you? I mean, what is it, how you're exposed to it?
We're trying with social media like Facebook, YouTube. But, for example, I'm going to tell you a story of a student from my university. She used to make talk about the government, and suddenly, one day, she disappeared. Like, nobody knows where she is. And, you know, it's just something that in Mexico happens all the time. The people don't have, like, liberty to talk about the government.
Somebody disappears, somebody complains about it, they're dead.
Yeah, it's...
Well, what is it that's taboo to discuss as a journalist? You're definitely not allowed to criticize what?
First, the government is like one of the hardest part of the journalists. They cannot speak bad about some politicians. And, you know, if you are famous, it's like, okay, but if you are a small journalist that is working like you, for example, with social media and that
kind of stuff. No, I'm dead. I'd be dead a long time ago. Done. Next. Ernie's gone.
It's typical.
You know, well, it's certain things you go, yeah, you just don't talk about that. So how are these, you know, movements or ideas expressed? They're just not? You know, it's just, you know, you're just quiet and you don't talk about it?
Well, I think that, yes, the most of people just don't talk about it. And if they do, they only do it by Facebook. That they don't, like, go out and express their ideas in public.
You know, we have piratewithoutborders.com in Spanish and French, you know, because we're like going, yeah, it's going worldwide. We're going to get some. So I just, there's a lot of things we can, if you need help, there's a lot of people that want to help, especially as a journalist, but maybe you need to be more private. Well, we just yesterday turned on a network where you can be private. It can never go down. It's caught, well, we'll get into it, and, you know, we'll talk after. But I'm telling you, you know, do you want to be impactful? Is that your goal?
Yeah.
But I want to be alive to do it. So we'll talk about that more when we come back in just a little bit. Now we're going to another part of the world.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Independence. All right. What we're going to do, I'm going to have you introduce yourself and say your name correctly for me. Go ahead. Say hello to everybody and tell the audience your name and where you're from.
Hello, everyone. It's great to be here. My name is Krzysztof Moszyński and I'm from Poland.
Whoa, shorten that down for me.
Okay, call me Chris. Just call me Chris.
Okay, now how do you say your name?
Krzysztof.
Krzysztof.
Yes,
Krzysztof.
Krzysztof.
Krzysztof. Did I say it right?
Kinda.
Krzysztof. Oh, yeah. Krzysztof.
Need some polishing, but you're getting there. You're getting
it's
there.
It's your freaking name, so we want to say it right. You know, I want to make up something. So, Krzysztof.
I'm not offended, by you butchering my name.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Okay. I'm the one that talks funny. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, introduce yourself. You're from where?
From Poland, though really you could say I'm from both Poland and Japan, because Japan is like my second country, my second home.
Really? How much, how long have you lived there, or how much do you spend time there?
I lived for a year, but my heart is still there, at least part of my heart.
You know, a regular guest we have, a gentleman named James Corbett, comes on every couple of weeks, and he lives in Japan. He does all his reporting. He's Canadian, lives in Japan, has a family there, and he comes on the show regular, and he has gazillions of views. You know, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of followers, and Japan.
So nice.
He really likes it, you know. So why do you like Japan? What's so great about Japan?
Well, there is this culture that's different from ours, from our Polish culture, but there are still similarities. For example, there is this spirit of mottainai, which you could say, you could translate to what a waste. So Japanese people don't like wasting things, not like wasting food, and Polish people are kind of the same.
Yeah, they're not a bunch of paper on your hamburger kind of, but it
gets
on a plate.
Yes. And there is this one traditional Japanese art that I particularly enjoy, which is the tea ceremony, the way of tea. Mm-hmm. It's the art that is not just about making tea, but also about making your own spirit, about practicing harmony within yourself and with harmony with other people. And I think this spirit of peace, this love of peace, is what is so great about Japan, and what could potentially be the bridge that connects the Japan to libertarianism, though right now it's pretty far from that.
You know, because they're more, they think in terms of collectives, you know, it's like, you know, the very us, we, they, them kind of thing, as opposed to the individual. And we've had experience with Japanese media and so on before in the 90s. And that was one thing, they just couldn't understand why the president didn't just rule the people, make them do whatever, just go give up your guns, damn it, just make them. You know, I don't know what the problem is here. So that was definitely an anti-gun culture. They, you know, got into that. But I'm familiar with the tea ceremony. I mean, I read the book Shogun, so now I'm an expert on it.
Oh.
But the whole thing is the presentation. Hmm. You know, it's all about, you know, it's like you're on a date when you do the tea ceremony. You've done that to impress. Well, I got it down, man. I watched all the YouTubes. I know how to do it, right? Hmm. You know, so and the humbleness of the cups. You know, the preparation of the tea, the turning of it, it's a dance, you know, so, and you're, how many times have you done that?
Well, I couldn't count, like, I'm still learning.
You really like it.
I'm still learning, but it's getting there.
Well, what's the kind of a similar thing here in America? I mean, you know, our culture adds to you, you're going, eh, whatever, I had a Big Mac before, I don't care.
Well, in the U.S., I'm not sure if there is something like the tea ceremony, but I've noticed that the people are here are very open and are very friendly, and it's great to be here. Like in Kyoto, when I used to talk to strangers, and they would be polite, they would be kind, but very, very close. In Poland, when I talk to the strangers, at least in big cities, well, you have different reactions. Sometimes people are nice and kind, and sometimes people are cold and like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's like on the streets of New York City.
Yes, yes. No. And here in Arizona, I feel free. I can talk to other people, and other people actually talk to me and talk back. Wow, it's so nice. And people are helpful. People are open. People are free. I think that these things like are kind of connected with one another.
Well, have you been to anywhere? Where have you been in America? Is it just been Phoenix?
For now, just Phoenix. I'm still experiencing. But
go on the streets of New York City or Chicago, it's going to be different.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't.
Yeah.
Big cities.
America is great because I went to Phoenix. Well, because Phoenix is great, not necessarily everywhere else. But generally in America, people want to be helpful. They're not, you know, too much of buttheads unless you're like in the wrong place doing the wrong thing. But so I'm, when you go back home, you haven't been here really that long. You only been here a week and a half. You guys got a ways to go yet. So when you go back home, you already can't wait, or you're Facebooking or you're contact emailing your friends and family, and you go, ooh, let me tell you about what? What's the favorite thing so far?
In America?
Yeah. Hmm. No, in Phoenix. You are not America. You're Arizona. Arizona is kind of like, you know, probably 80% America.
Yeah. Well, you could say that this place is more American than others, than many others, but right now I could talk about everything being big, just like Maria talked about before, because there are big cars, there are big streets, there are big places, big distances, and there are big hearted people. And that's what I can talk about, and that's what I enjoy. I also enjoy the fact that you can say that, oh, I'm a libertarian, and they are not saying, like, liber what? What does it mean? What is that?
What's a librarian?
Yeah, librarian, yeah. Or libertarian, so you be indecent and don't really care about morality, right? So you're like this immoral guy who like sleeps with random people, or not people, maybe animals. Yeah.
You know, this is I'm glad you're having this experience, but a lot of other states it may not be the same. It came from decades of a lot of hard work by activists here in Arizona. You know, everybody goes, why is it always Arizona? Because a crap load of work went into it. You know, that's why we'd run for office and be all, but now the laws are changed. They make it to where it's almost impossible for libertarians to get on the ballot to run now.
Oh,
they don't like that. None. You're in the wrong pool, man. You got to go over there. There's a backup bus for y'all, but it doesn't matter. Cause it's getting to the point. Politics doesn't matter anymore. It's you guys. It's the youth here. It's you guys doing this stuff. And that's what's making the difference and why I'm so supportive of you guys being here. We're going to go long. We got like a minute of the live show. So go to the streaming on freedomsphoenix.com. You'll go ahead and see. Yeah, I show you. It's right there on the left over here. Yeah, it wants me to update. And I don't like updating. But you go right here and you click on that. And you can listen to the shows in the break at the end. And we can go long and we can just yak it without commercials. Commercial break. You know, one thing that I wanted to try and get from you was also, is there anybody back home that you think should come? Are you like wanting to encourage them? You say, look, man, we got to get back America. I want to share it with you.
Oh, many, many people. Like, I'm trying to be everywhere when it comes to the liberty movement in Poland, in Warsaw. I'm really trying to connect the various environments because people who like liberty are often conflicted and they have often some different views. There are some conservative liberals who are like pro-liberty, but yeah, the state is still there. There are some libertarians, there are some ANCAPs, and I think, well, we have a lot in common, so why not cooperate? And I'm trying to make this cooperation.
You know, what we're going to get into, when we get done with the live show here, is that I'm wondering what makes them a libertarian. How'd that happen? Where'd they even hear about it? It's very infectious. When you got somebody, they're going to go pirate, or they're going to go libertarian, they're going to leave me aloneism. Are they then those? There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Where does that come from? How do you get exposed to it? I was kind of, born that way, raised that way, it was not representative. I'm going, God, does anybody even know what I'm talking about? Then you meet your first libertarian, you go, oh. Well, I want to know their first libertarian experience. Was it a grandfather, a coach, a boss, a parent? What was it? Where did it come from? They see YouTube? We're going to find out right now.
I've been told no.
All right, now we can just yak it. All right, we'll start off with you.
Okay.
How did you come, the word libertarian hit your brain cells when, how?
Well, the word, it all started by me thinking about what is right. I'm a Catholic and I'm really trying to search for truth in my life and for truth about what is good, what is right, what should be and what should not be. And one day, one of my friends from my parish was talking about politics. And politics was this topic I was not all that interested about. But because there were some people, there were some conflicts, personal conflicts, I didn't want to get involved. But he was talking about the way a society could be organized. And in his view, the best way would be for small communities to live with one another, for people who want to live the same way, to live close together, to live the way they want to live. And I thought like, well, maybe let's just let people live how they want to live. And this way they can do good things, they can do bad things, but that's their liberty, that's their freedom, that's what makes them able to be moral in the first place. That's what makes them human beings.
Yeah, and forced morality in morality.
Yes, yes. and then I was, these ideas were being slowly cooked. He recommended to me a YouTube channel which I watched when I was in Japan, and I was like very much into it.
Okay, what was it?
What?
The video. The channel.
The channel. It's Od Dymarkov, I think. It's a very, very, not very well-known channel. But anyway, then I came back to Poland, and I was like, I want to do something. And I took part, and when I heard about this recruitation for the project, Economics Lessons for Youth, I was like, yeah, this is it. I've gotta go in. And I went in and I went deep in. And it was great.
Okay, now wait. Economics for you. Yasek, wants to.
I just wanted to add something that, because I know this channel actually. And this channel is promoting Ron Paul in Poland.
Yes.
So you probably watch a lot of Ron Paul videos.
Yes, I watch a lot.
You see, See, Ron Paul is going global. Ron Paul is everywhere.
No, we knew it. It's a decentralization of a spontaneous order of everybody and freedom and what he said, you know? And I don't know if you know, we were heavily involved in the Ron Paul Revolution here.
Yes,
you know,
I've heard.
You know, so we get it. And we understood the impact of it. And our whole goal was not to get him elected or votes. You're still voting. I mean, I don't care. It was how long can we keep him up on that podium? Because they wanted to take him off. They went, hell no, we need to get this guy off. And everybody's like, really? You sure? You want to try that? You know, so it was that was what was driving a lot of our efforts. And it we knew that it was worldwide and it was a worldwide revolution.
Yeah.
Well, you got impacted by that. So that Jacek, what you're saying is that what he was getting exposed to were these people that were supportive of Ron Paul and the libertarian the concept and being able to talk about it. And all of a sudden he got infected.
Yes. Yes. So these videos were like clearly effective and he catched the virus of freedom. And I'm glad about that.
All right. That's good. Well, then you went down the rabbit hole, as we call it here.
Yes, yes.
You know, and then you're going, now what? Now what are you going to do with it?
Well, I was teaching economics, free market economics, and I was
teaching
getting,
it where?
At schools. This is a countrywide project, national project, economics lessons for the youth. We teach all over Poland, in schools all over Poland. We go to schools, we kind of infiltrate.
Who's we? You got an organization or
something? Yeah, there is Kolibar Association, which is a conservative, liberal, you could say, kind of organization. There are a lot of libertarians there as well. And we do it together with the Polish Mises Institute. And it's a great project. It's a project that not only lets the kids in schools learn about how the world could be and learn the good economics when they can, but it also trains the people who do it. Like, people learn to talk about economics, learn to speak about those things, and it really builds them up. They learn public speaking. And this was the groundbreaker for me, and now I'm
to be able to advocate for
yes,
it. Like advocates
yes,
for
yes.
self-liberty and all this kind. You know, there's a word that I want to try and popularize this again. It's called catalectics, and it came out of Austrian economics of blah blah blah. And what happened is James Corbett, he made a point of this, and I want to emphasize this. When you're talking about economics, it comes from the root word, you know, home budget or something. It's like there's one economy, and it's an art and science, and we rule and we turn dials and we flip switches and we're going to make stuff happen. Where catalectics is, you know, it's a free market. It's just whatever an individual is making a transaction. I'm going to pay for this thing because, you know, I want it, and it's worth whatever I'll pay for it. And it's individual decisions that make up a free market economy. You know, it's just, I don't want to call it free market economy. It has more controls to it. It's just a free market. Just boom, free market. I want a free market. Free market what? And everything. A free market. You know, a free market economy? Nah. The economy has got like dials and switches and somebody's going to change an interest rate or something. It's called catalactics. Catalactics is the individual making a decision based on whatever the heck they want. So I want to encourage you the research on catalectics. It is an Austrian economic thing, and I just found out this, and it represents so much more clearly what it is that I'm trying to advocate. You ever heard of that word, Jacek?
Yes, I heard. It comes from Friedrich August von Hayek's teachings.
You win, man.
Yeah.
Boom! Boom! See? It's because it's usually a lot in the language. When they get you saying their word, they get to define it. And it's not even defined. It's kind of this economic thing. It's just, you know, what the hell are you talking about? Well, we got to change the economy with this dial we got. And I go, hey, man, a free market. There are no dials. You know, it's just individuals. So this has been your road has been economics, which we will call catalactics.
But what is interesting, look, they chose a strategy to teach young people in the high school economics because the high schools accept people from outside coming to teach economics, but in reality they switched some things in the minds of these young people, and it was not just economics. They learned from these early lessons that, oh, there is a whole world of freedom
there which is more represented by catalactic.
There's
that's
more
the,
than
that's
economics.
The point.
Exactly.
You know, catalactics is the free market. It's freedom that gives you the better results that they keep yakking about, you know, but right. they don't really do when they got this control thing going on. Mm. So in Poland, when you're doing this, you're going, how does that manifest itself? You know, do we need more permits, less regulation, more regulation? You know, people opening business, them doing their own thing. I mean, you're going to these people and talking about economics, you know, and they're going, do I get a permit for that? I'm going to open a lemonade stand. I'm going to do, I mean, are you getting them to start businesses? I mean, what are you encouraging?
Well, like the economics we teach in this project in particular is the basics of economical thinking. So, this is the knowledge that many people don't get at their schools, but it's a very vital knowledge because it teaches you about making decisions. And these are very different decisions. This may be decisions regarding your
body,
regarding your possessions, property, regarding even your spirituality. I'm actually...
You're dangerous, man!
Yes.
You can't have all that. You're bad.
I'm actually developing another project called Economics for Catholics, where I teach not only about economics, but also about how it translates to your spiritual life and to your moral life, to your ethical decisions. And it's like kind of economics, kind of coaching.
Well, this is good. You know, we need to get to the other guests, but I want to share this with you. In the early 90s, you know, I'm about your age then or so on, and we had bumper stickers. We did a whole bunch of bumper stickers. One of them, it says, Jesus is libertarian. Because at the time, they were trying to have the conservatives were saying, oh, it's a Christian nation, and we're going to make everybody be Christian. I'm going... Really? I go, yeah, well, he's not Republican. I can tell you that, okay? So I just go, Jesus is libertarian, small l. You know, just because witness, parable, testimony, voluntary persuasion. He didn't go to the Caesar's legions and say, make him be your brother's keeper. You know, take your spear and force him to whatever the heck. We go, no, no, no. It was when they, of course, I go to church and they see the bumper sticker on my car. I go, what? And I go, hey, man, you want to talk about it? I'll tell you all about it. Christ is all about voluntary persuasion. It was through me. He's not going to make you. He'll have your soul and put a 45 to it and say, you know, you're going to hell if you don't. Yeah, it's a personal decision. And the New Testament, Old Testament, not so much. But the New Testament was all about free will. That is the point. So I'm going, there's so many parallels that you can use with the Catholic Church and the Catholic, you know, and you bring libertarianism into it. They look themselves in the mirror and they'll see just how bad the leadership in the Catholic Church is. And if you compare the teachings of Christ with libertarian philosophy, all of a sudden they're going to be convicted on themselves. They'll go, damn, we're not really that good. You know, we need to be more libertarian like Christ was. You know, I've used that argument many times.
Well, I would say that most people don't really think about those things. Most Catholics don't really think about those things.
Which is what makes you dangerous.
And I would say most priests and most bishops don't think about those things too often. But really, when you get to the core, what is the purpose of following Jesus? What is your real objective in life if you want to follow Jesus? Seek the truth, yeah. And your objective is to be saint, to become a saint. And to become a saint, you need to change what? Not
yourself.
Other people, yourself. Yeah. You need to change yourself. So you need to be able to do it. You need to make your own choices about that. God didn't make us slaves, he made us free, which came with consequences. Which came with consequence known as the original sin, and which came with consequence known even as hell. And it was still worth it in God's eyes. So we should really think about those things, think twice before we decide that, hey, let's take away someone's freedom. This will make him better. No, it won't make him better. It will take away his opportunity to decide about those things himself. We can show him the way, but we can't drag him through the way. You can't force anyone to become a saint. It's impossible.
You know, this is, I want to talk to Maria, because being from Ukraine, I'm wondering how much spirituality, you know, has an impact on this kind of stuff, you know, a principle, the faith and so on. Because someone, a lot of times from different countries or different cultures, or here in America, man, you got a wide range of everything, you know, the spiritual component, that's a distraction of freedom. God, man, you keep bringing up, everybody brings up God, damn it, you know. And so I'm wondering, is there a spiritual component, you know, that you're looking at when you're doing a lot of things, and I'm going, all right, does that mean anything to you?
Well, I'm from Catholic family also, and but I have to tell you that in my generation it's a little bit different, I think, because people are born into kind of religious families, but if you do not come to religion on your own, no one will do it for you, because for many people of my age, the fact that you're going to church doesn't mean anything. So I have to tell you that my kind of spiritual beliefs, maybe it's a system of beliefs, right? It was kind of developed and formed in kind of older age, I think. And I think that Ukraine is quite religious. For Ukraine, religion is very important.
Yeah, I'm just going to have them switch seats, so when we get to her, she'll...
But the problem is, you know, that in Ukraine we have... it's hard to explain, but we have, like, Ukrainian church, Ukrainian Orthodoxy, and Russian Orthodoxy. And for a very long time, church was a way of kind of our neighbor to influence our country, you know? So it was a very political thing. And I think that in my country, everything involves politics, and it's very hard to distance from it, even in religion, you know?
Well, my point is that we just had an article on yesterday that was Pastor Chuck Baldwin was writing. He's always going on about the Patriot pastors here in America, what role they had in the revolution here. You know, 200 and whatever years ago, they were like making a moral case for why we need to be our own country and the support of the individual. And a lot of times religions are used by the state. You have the Church of England. You got the a lot of times Romans, you know, Romans 13, where they're going on about you got to give deference to the government. We just had last week the Pope telling Catholic priests in China that they got to, you know, give supremacy to the Communist Party. I mean, the Pope is saying this, you know, and I'm going, this is a lot of times religion is used to collectivize people, to get them on the plantation, to make sure that they're following the rules. And, you know, and I'm wondering, in your generation, are you guys starting to go, yeah, if you're really studying, we got the internet, man, we're looking at a lot of discussion and having, it's not about that. It's about the individual growth of blah, 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 blah. And libertarianism allows for that. They want to give the impression that libertarianism is like he was saying that it's a immoral, that you're all wanting to, and that's not true. It's a freedom to be, think whatever you want, but the freedom to be moral.
But you know what? What you don't really understand, that libertarianism, as you say, in Europe and in the US, is like two totally different things. Because before you come here, you do not fully understand what it is. Because, and I've discussed it with our group, I've discussed it with many people, like meaning sometimes switched. And I'm not even sure that so many people in my country understand, for example, what libertarianism is. And they do not understand the meaning of this word. So, but as for this part of the church, the ability to unite people, right? I think it is still very important, and I think that people I know, they kind of in their deep in their minds, they are libertarians. They just don't know about that. So that's the thing.
Can you use a spiritual component to introduce them to libertarianism? You know, because like we do it. Like I'm at church. It says Jesus is libertarian. What? And I go, yeah. He voluntary persuasion. He didn't use force. You know, it was witness, parable, testimony. He would teach and go, yeah, this is what happens when you do bad stuff. And you go, yeah, you start making that argument. I don't know, you might get shot. I mean, I don't know what happens.
You know, but one thing I know for sure as a journalist, I had this experience, that you have to talk different ways to different audiences, mm-hmm. To different audiences. So my point is, I would never talk to people about libertarianism through religion, because some people might be atheists, some people might have other religious beliefs. I would definitely want to tell more about this religious part of libertarianism, of course, you know, but before people need to know what it is, what the meaning of this word, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand, and that's, you know, that may
you
be
didn't want
one,
to scare them away,
method.
Right?
You know, it's, yeah, I'm a scare guy.
But you know,
but not in a mean way. I mean, you kind of shock them out of their standing. Whoa, that's not what I heard it was. Because a lot of times it's always the state or the church or some other opposition that wants to tell people what libertarianism is. You know, what would you define it as? When you're going to your audience and you're writing, you define it as what?
That's the problem. You're saying like the church or the government tells what their libertarianism is. Well, no one does that in our country. Like, what's the main difference is, like, for example, here you meet people and they say, I'm Republican, I'm a Democrat, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Ukraine, you can have a party saying we're Democrats. But like, when you actually look into what they say, it's completely opposite to what the definition of this word is.
Yeah,
you
they're
know?
Fascist, socialist,
they are fascist,
whatever.
So, or like sometimes they switch their system of beliefs depending on the government or like political situation or economic situation, you know? So I would never ever say that you can define libertarianism, you know? What I can say, you know, that, for example, when I came to this program, you know, I started reading more about what that is. And as a journalist, I would like to tell more about, like, different, like, you know, even when I went to the embassy, United States embassy, and they were asking me why I want to go here, you know, I was like, you hear so many things about America, good things, right? But when it comes to the point, step by step, what's so good about this country, you know? And I'm telling you, no one would tell you that. You have some general things you hear from, you watch in movies, you know? My point is that I wanted to know and to hear from Republicans what they think, Democrats, what they think, who supports them, you know? And I think that slowly I'll learn that. I'm learning, like, for example...
You're assuming they know.
I assume in many cases they do know, even at least better than like in countries I've been to.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, I like, you know, it's about details. For example, I like that we went to the kind of meetup with the candidate for Phoenix mayor, right? And it may be good, it may be bad, but what I like that people actually... this candidate, he actually answers people's questions, whether they are good or bad, but he answers. He tries to...
Who does?
Nick Sarwark.
Oh, okay.
He gets to the point. And for me, it's something I've never seen before. Because, for example, our candidates, they would like answer some questions in public, like in front of many, many cameras. But when they really get to be elected, no one would even recall what they were promising. But here... if he doesn't do what he was promising before, people would have some questions. And you know what? I had goosebumps when I saw that. I think that is so important, but you need ages. You need like years and years to train people to be so. But also, I think what is important, but no one speaks about that. Material welfare, like material ability of people. When you don't have when you have no food on your table, when you have no stability, you would not think of what the political system in your country is like. And if someone gives you some money, for example, saying you vote for that person, you would do that. Here, people have, like, you know, basic needs satisfied, and they can think of something different. In my country, it's not everyone has this ability because you know,
it's kind of like the idea that there's no libertarians in foxholes. I mean, you know, it's like when you're on the homeless line, when you're in the you're living under a bridge. There's not a whole lot of libertarians yet, but libertarianism it provides abundance so that there aren't homeless people.
For example, taxation, right? Question of taxation. Mm-hmm. Like in Ukraine, it's kind of high, and some people just like kind of businesses, small businesses, they go, they hide their incomes, you know, not to pay the taxes, you know, and that is considered like a good thing in many European countries that happens. But I think Ukraine is kind of sadly number one in that list. Maybe number two after Russia, probably, right?
For what? For compliance or not compliance?
For hiding
gray markets.
Markets, you know, for hiding their incomes.
No, I remember in the 80s, you know, the whole thing about Russia was you could get it. The answer was always yes. It was just how much.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you want blue jeans? Well, they're not at the store, but gosh darn it, you can get them. I know a guy, you know, so it's always the free market is always there.
But it's always there, but you pay for it. Maybe just like tell one. Like,
yeah, it's called the drug war.
It's a small story. My grandmother in the 80s, she went to Czech Republic. When she came back, she wouldn't speak for a few days and she was very quiet. My mother asked her, what's wrong with you? And she said, we were living in USSR, right? And she said, you know what? I had no idea people can live like that. They can go to restaurants, cafes just because they want to. And they can buy shoes just because they want to and not to give bribes and not to search for these goods, you know? And she said, we were told we are kind of the best in USSR. But we were actually, we've been told lies for so many years, you know? Yeah. And we were living in, and by the way, once American told me that when he went to the USSR, he said, there's like dark cloud around people. They wouldn't talk to me. And you know why? Because people would be actually kind of jailed for speaking to foreigners. They had to immediately kind of report if they saw foreigners.
Yeah, it's like going to North Korea or something.
And imagine, please, for a second, what is the result of this politics. I was born in society, and it's very hard to get out of this political system. We're trying to, but it's still hard.
Okay, where were you at like age 10 to 12, around in there?
Well, I spent some time in Germany, but I was in Ukraine, actually, 10, 12.
Okay, which was, and you're how old? About? I ain't gonna say nothing. But anyway, you're young.
I'm 24.
So you were born in what?
1994.
Okay, 94. So you grew up coming out of the Soviet Union.
I grew up 1 year after USSR broke kind of in small pieces, right? And I remember.
Was there hope as a young child that there was difference, or was there still this suppression from the top down telling you could and couldn't?
You do not understand, really. I can't explain you how different the world around me right now. You know, I remember first shops where we could just actually take food. Not the saleswoman would give it to us. I remember how it was changing. But, you know, I remember when people had no food to eat, you know. I remember that moment. And everything was so gray. And still, if you go to small villages, you still see this gray territories. And you see many people dreaming just to be, for example...
Have their basic needs met.
Basic needs satisfied. And when I was a journalist, I would travel around Ukraine. And in the morning, I would go to the house where they have one, literally, 100-year-old bed. And in the evening, you go to some kind of event where the ticket costs $500. And because that happens in Ukraine, a country of differences. But my point is, even here in the US, I sometimes talk to people. And I remember we had a student from the US. And she was complaining that she has to, I still remember in Ohio. She was from Ohio, Mansfield City. And she said, we have such a huge problem because we need to go to the cinema in another city. We didn't have a theater in our city. So it takes 20 minutes by car to get there. And I'm like, yeah, that's a problem, you know. But I was very sarcastic about that, as you understand. So as I'm saying, I believe that first we need to fight corruption. We need to literally fight corruption. And then we will just maybe talk about some differences. But the more I read about this, the more I hear about libertarian needs and its connection to religion, the more I think that this is one of the best ways to get out of many troubles.
For my experience is that conservatives and politicians and so on, they use religion as a, well, that's why kings got to be, you know, have the priest, you know, put the crown on them. You know, they need some kind of sanction. They need some absolution. They need endorsement, you know.
Yeah,
they anoint them with this power and God gave it to you of whatever. When you have a spiritual component that you use the same argument for the supremacy of the individual, that you are God's creature, you, God is within you, that you are the representative. I go put my hand on your shoulder and I say, whose life is this? It's either yours or it's somebody else's. It's one or the other, okay? So if you can get the idea of free will that you are the ultimate, some people would say, well, it's God's life. And I go, yeah, but you're signing the contract. You're the one doing the time in jail. You're the one that, you know, the steward of this life, this gift from God. So I'm going, you're responsible for this gift that you've gotten. It's not somebody else's. It's not a king. It's not a, you know, a police officer. I mean, you do what you have to get along and not be dead. But I mean, you know, just the moral understanding that you are the manifestation of this will of God, that you are the vehicle by which he manifests his will. If you can get that into someone's head, it can't be unlearned. How do you unlearn the truth? And what happens when people get that and they say they are being moral by thinking for themselves, not doing what somebody told you because they got a pointy hat, you know, that changes everything.
But tell me, please, one thing. How do you imagine a person understanding that he or she is a creation of God when, for example, you come to the embassy, for example, and someone like, for example, bans you from getting a visa just because, for example, they think that you will stay here illegally or as an immigrant. And that is humiliating. My point is, like, if it all depends on your, on how you live, where you live. And when, you know what, I'm 100% agree with what you said. And I really like what you said. And the concept of you being a, like a manifestation of God's will is good, but as I was saying, if you don't have what to eat, you wouldn't be thinking
about
that.
I'm hip. You know, I understand that. A lot of times, that's why libertarians, when they want to spread the word, they go where it's the worst. Like in Mexico, we have people building homes, you know, with crypto, building homes in earthquake areas in Mexico City. I mean, you know, this is, it's why we do it. You know, we're doing this voluntarily, but we didn't use coercion. We didn't, you know, take money from someone. We didn't, you know, use a government program. We didn't, I mean, you know, these kinds of things, you'd be that example. And, you know, the reason I bring this up is that, have they ever seen the Philosophy of Liberty animation? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't think so.
You know,
they're going to meet Ken Skoulent, who is coming to Phoenix.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know, we did... You know, we'll talk about this. We need to take a break before we get back, you know, to Andrea and get her story. I'm just going to leave the leave the stream going so you don't have to reconnect. But I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording. We'll start a new one with Andrea, and then we'll go until we're done. We'll be right back. Then we're right back. You know, we need to take a break there. You know, it's kind of, you know, I've been trying to drink a gallon of water a day, and it takes its toll. So what we want to do is we're going to go straight to Andrea, and we want to get her story from Mexico. She's in Mexico City, and I wanted to... It's been very interesting to get the perspective of a lot of the guys here and their experiences in their own country, and we're going to probably be a week or two before we can get the other three that come on, and because tomorrow, a lot of them, we're getting ready to go to the Freedom Summit, so, you know, we have that to contend with, and that's going to eat into the schedule. And Mark Victor go, hey, man, I got work planned for him, you know, so one of the interns is there. I'm interested in going. We have Nepal, Venezuela, and what's the other?
Russia.
Russia. Okay. We've had Russians before, I think, you know.
Not with my group.
Okay. Maybe it's Ukraine.
Ukraine, Nepal. Yeah. We always had from Ukraine.
Yeah. So it's, why Ukraine all the time?
They are hungry for liberty, I think, and they are hungry to see the world. So that's
and,
why.
And Nepal.
Yeah.
Nepal. I'm interested in this Nepal thing. This is the first time you had someone from Mexico, isn't it?
Yes, it's the first time. Actually, we have students out of Europe.
You know, this is, you know, yeah. Mexico, we have a lot of contacts, you know, and a lot of, you know, ties with Mexico. And, of course, I'm Arizona, so I've, you know, I had a restaurant, so I had a lot of Mexican employees that, you know, give me a lot of history. I spoke enough Spanish to be able to, you know, get by, you know, because when I sell pizzas to people that spoke Spanish, I wanted their money. Ernie, so I was motivated.
Do you know that I also had pizzerias in Poland?
Really?
Yeah. I had a food truck with pizza and small restaurant. But I sold it. But I also have interesting experiences to share.
I tell you what, a couple of nights ago, we went out to eat, and it's almost always Mexican. God, I love Mexican food, man. It's just the way
it is.
It's
the best in the world.
I know. It's yummy. Yummy, yummy, yummy. All right. What we want to do is I'm going to let you introduce yourself. It's Andrea Hernandez. She's from Mexico City. And, you know, we talked about how you got hooked up with them a little bit. But, you know, the first realization that you were a libertarian, you know, or you're, I don't know, impressed by the philosophy, you understood it, you embraced it. Where did that come from? How did that happen?
Okay, I think that I always had been a libertarian, but you know, in Mexico, the libertarian word is not popular at all. So the first time that I knew it was when I was studying my.
What do you bachelor's. Mean not popular? It's not liked, or it's just not known?
Not known.
Not known. Okay.
Anybody knows about libertarian ideas, because you know. I think that Maria was right when she said that when you don't have enough food for eat and you don't have a proper place to live, it's really hard to understand how the liberal ideas works. For example, now our new government is giving money to everybody, you know, like young people that are studying or people that are not doing anything.
Universal basic income. You just, you get a check. Here's your check.
Yeah,
don't
exactly.
Don't bother us.
Exactly. Also for every kind of people, they are giving money to them just for gain votes. And it
just for what?
For make more votes from the parties. For the parties.
Oh, votes. Okay, I thought you said boats.
No.
Okay, boats. So getting votes, they're just buying votes.
Exactly, that's why. And that's why our new president won, basically, because he made a promise about give money to the people that don't have money to eat, give money for the children, give money for everybody. So that's why maybe the people vote for him, because the people believe that that's the
police. Do they believe? Do you believe it's accurate? Do you believe?
I
that,
don't
you know,
believe.
Yeah. See, I'm not voting. That's not working.
No. I don't believe in that. But you know, I think that the Mexicans do for that reason, because they don't.
They want you to think that they did. But let's go ahead and ask your generation. And you're how old?
23.
Okay, so you're young, okay? Now, you and your friends, you know, your family, your siblings, do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have a little sister.
Okay, so now, well, how little? How old is she?
7 years old.
Okay, so we'll see what happens there. Okay, now, big sister is going to explain it to her, you know, and what are you going to explain? With your friends that you're on social media with, that you talk to about, that you talk with these things about, you go to different events and so on, you're going, are you way minority, or is there a lot of people your age that understand what you're talking about?
No, actually, I think that we are a small, really small group in Mexico, but because we don't have information about it. You know, we believe in that ideas, but we didn't know exactly the name of our ideas. And that's why I create Project Gelem.
Project what?
Project Gelem. Gelem means like raw material in Hebrew. And the reason why I create Project Gelem is to help like the new generations, the students from high schools and universities, to have a different vision of Mexico and create their own projects and believe in themselves, because, you know, it's really comfortable to be in the zone of doing anything and only receive money, and it's really comfortable, you know, to believe in politicians.
Yeah, no, if you they go, you know what? These guys over here, they want to take away your money you get every month.
Exactly.
And they go, whoa, I don't like
with
them.
With taxes. Yeah.
Why? Because they're going to take my money. Damn
and
it.
You are paying more taxes, and it's crazy.
I don't care. I get free money. Free money works. Money.
Yeah, but you
robots
know.
Robots are coming. I need money.
No, I think that Mexico really needs leaders that make a business, new business, because that's what Mexico needs. We need, like, a place to work. Because, you know, I think that immigration from Mexico to U.S. is for because Mexicans are searching for better jobs, a better life, and yeah.
Okay, let's bring that. This is a big thing. Libertarians are about, you know, if it was all private property, then you just ask, you know, the property owner if they want to have an immigrant come across the border of, like, it's my property. You know, but now it's like this government thing and who gets to say yes and no. And then you have all these people from Honduras and Venezuela coming up through Mexico. Mexico has a wall at the southern end. No. Okay, fine. Go America. We don't need you, you know. So this whole wall thing with the United States, what do you think people your age in Mexico, they think, you know, America's mean for wanting to control immigration, or they kind of understand? You know, what's your position on that?
I think that the people from Mexico can understand why Donald Trump, for example, is saying that bad things about Mexico. You know, for people for my age is really, well, I'm from Mexico City.
But so, do you think Donald Trump's saying bad things about Mexico, or is he just, look, they just can't come unless I give them a permission slip or something? I mean, is that a bad thing? I mean, do they put in the media that Trump is saying, I hate Mexicans because they're Mexican because Mexicans?
Yeah, we do believe that he has a problem with Mexico. But at the same time, it's not our country, so Mexico needs to work in our country, you know, to improve. Just not blame U.S. or other countries about our problems. We need to solve them in Mexico.
Oh, what a concept! Snap! You know, you fix your own problem. See, the thing is that, I give you an example. I want to share this with you. It was probably late 90s, you know, I think it was 2000. Remember, my son Corsair was probably 12 years old. A friend of mine's a partner, my business partner in a restaurant, he was a city councilman here in Glendale. We went to church together. We, you know, good friends. His church had a building event at an orphanage in Mexico. So what, there was a caravan of about, I don't know, probably 8 trucks and some cars that went down there to help finish building, put the roof up and some plumbing and add an orphanage there. Now, this orphanage was near a junkyard. I mean, a literally junk, where people lived in abandoned cars in the junkyard. Then you had a big dump, and people, you go dump anything, boom, army of people come check and go through. This is how they survived. As we were going down there, it was a really good life lesson for my son. And I said, as we cross this imaginary line in the desert, look here. Now you got Walmart over there and, you know, a Circle K and a 7-Eleven and kind of in the stores. And, you know, and there's, you know, you got paved roads and so on. Now pay attention to what we have. We're going to cross this imaginary line and watch what happens. We go on the other side, dirt roads, mangy dogs running around, no bathrooms to go to, where's the gas station, where's the store, how we got, it was, man, we were definitely third world, underdeveloped country of. Why? What was the difference? Not like Mexico didn't have enough resources, not like Mexico didn't have beautiful scenery, not like Mexico has a whole bunch of beautiful coastline, and not like Mexico doesn't have great people. You know, what was the problem? It was respect for individual property. If you accumulated anything and you got where you got a bunch of go, woo, there's somebody with a shiny badge there to take it from you, to tax you, to regulate you, to do it. It was not because they didn't have, you know, a good government is because they had too much government, or somebody with a shiny badge that's going to explain it to you. So I am to emphasize this with my son. I'm going, why is this a problem? Because they don't have free market competition and protection of property rights. And you go into all this stuff. When we had a big event here in Arizona, one of the writers that wrote on Freedom's Phoenix was the ambassador from the state of Sonora, our sister state here in Arizona. And he had an office at the Arizona State Capitol building. And he would write for us. And the governor then, Napolitano, didn't like it. You know, I can't believe you got this libertarian here. Well, long story, a lot of things happened and so on. But our encouragement to the Mexican immigrant, they had big rallies, hundreds of thousands of people that were passing out cards to the Philosophy of Liberty animation we were talking about. Philosophia de la Libertad, okay? In Spanish, and before they leave today, I'll have them watch this, and you'll see we copy thousands of these on our DVD duplicators over there. We've made 3,000 in Arabic that went to Tahrir Square during Arab Spring. We've done thousands of them here, thousands in Spanish, thousands of these to have people understand the basic fundamental problem of why they're leaving Mexico. It is not to come here and make a socialist country for the Democrats. You need you to vote for us so we can give you a bigger universal basic income. So I'm going, if you have something, and that's why we are trying to do a project in Venezuela, too. We had a guy on last month. We were working on that. Now we have a contact in Mexico. If there is something in Mexico City, something that we can help her, something that, you know, $1,000 here, $2,000 there can, oh, my God, make a big, giant, oh, my God, difference. And we already have a lot of the material translated in Spanish because we're Arizona. So if we can do that and you work with us, we got a lot of things and a lot of ways to help. But how would we help? Where would we help? Who would we be helping? Well, she's going to tell us right now.
Well, I think that, for example, in my project, Project Golem, we are trying to make new projects with students so they can make their own business projects. And they have, and when you have the opportunity to make new business, and you see that the results are good, you are going to keep in your country, and you are going to keep working for make a better Mexico. You know.
But is there some politicians going, hey, I see you're making some money, it's mine now. I say you don't have a permit. You need to pay me $100 to be able to do whatever. You see, that's the problem. Is that there are plenty of industrious Mexicans. I've hired them. I purposely hired them. I'm like, they go, well, you got to have the I-9, a form. And it says, I have inspected their documents and they appear to be genuine to me. You know, they got to write the work. Oh, here, fog this mirror. You got to write the work. I didn't care. Because I had such good experience with Mexican workers that I paid them more. This was not, I wasn't taking advantage of them because, they were, undocumented or so. I go, heck no. The IRS just wants you to have a number to pay Social Security to get, here's your number. You go down to the IRS, they don't care. At least they didn't used to, So now, I that is not the problem. It is the freedom that they need there. When they're successful, they are attacked. Yeah. Is that true or not?
Yeah, and I think that, for example, we in Mexico...
pull that mic closer.
It's true what you said. For example, foreigners that are trying to came to our country to do business, big business like fabrics and that kind of stuff, they are always like hard barriers for do their jobs. They have to keep the corruption outside of the business. Because, for example, I'm going to give you a really, really interesting example. We had the governor of one governor in Mexico, and he
one
is
what? One governor?
Governor.
Governor.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was. His name is Duarte, Javier Duarte. And it's crazy how hard can be the corruption. Actually, Acapulco, was part of his government, and.
Acapulco is very corrupt.
Yeah.
It's just, I went there and they were like, please bring in the federal troops to get rid of our freaking local troops that are so, well, you know, the police. And we're just like, you know, and we loved working with the people, but we didn't deal with, you know, you'll challenge the cartel, you don't go into the port, you stay, you know, around on the beach and you kind of, you know, and it's all good for tourists. But, yeah, you know, we had it explained to us. We talked to a lot of people. I've been going there for every year for like the past 5-6 years.
But, you know, Javier Duarte was incredibly corrupted. For example, he stole millions of dollars from the state. And then he even stole the medicine of children with cancer to put that money to another of his account. It was crazy, you know. Imagine how you have to, what you have to think to stole the medicines for your benefit.
Sociopaths, they're bad guys. Government loves they get the shiny badge. They're in government. You know, it's like, you know, we need good guys in government. When are there ever good guys in government? When does that happen? You know, the bad guys gravitate to government because it gives them this legitimacy of doing these kinds of things. You got to abandon the idea of if there is such a thing as good government. That's the problem. There isn't. You know, so you have competition.
We were yesterday with some students at the conservative meeting, and they talked about different kind of school boards here in Arizona, and they said, like, anytime we have a meeting of the school board, there's this progressive guy, the LGBTQ verity guy, there is this some, basically the hard left people are always there. They always take voice and they want to influence because they just wait to get the access to the schools, and they are not happy about this. And I took their voice and I say, you know what? They are there because the state is their dream. The control of the state is their dream. And you, as a conservatives, you are still in big numbers here. You should fight to not change them in these positions, because you will be never better than them.
Yeah, eliminate the position.
Eliminate the position. So they don't have a place to go to and to brag and to influence. Just eliminate it. And Roy Miller liked what I said, but I'm not sure everybody agreed.
You know, this is one thing for you, Andrea. I'm just, you know, is that a possibility? You know, that you have people understand that trying to fix the government is the problem. You're always going to have you got to fix yourself. It's down to self-ownership, down to the individual. Once you fix that, then the state just, because of technology, that's this whole pirate thing. We're just talking about decentralization down to the individual. It's not about voting. You know, the heck they go, yes, we all let them vote. It was accurate. Trust us.
Yeah, it's not.
Do you believe in the accuracy of the election?
No.
Then what the hell are you doing it for?
You know, I think that what Mexico needs is like new free market. Like, we need more people to participate in politics and economic and be a social active in Mexico. Because, yeah, for example, there are many people that I just there, but they are not doing and see what is happening with the government and how is increasing the corruption, but nobody says nothing. There are only a small group of people that say, like, come on, we can do something.
What about crypto? What about, you know, Bitcoin and stuff like that? Is that, you know, across your radar?
Yeah, in Mexico, we don't know about.
Man, that's. I tell you what we did. We're down in Acapulco, you know, my wife and I go down there, and you can get a beach massage right there with the waves lapping and kind of relaxing in the shade, and you get a massage for like $15 for a half hour or, you know, an hour or something like that. And we're going, wow, that's, you know, this is cool. Well, we got to know a woman. She's a grandmother, you know, that was there, gave good massage. I want her next year. She, hey, hi. And I'm like, yep, again, next year. Yay, hi. We're good. And we go, you know what you need? You know, especially with a lot of people who got Bitcoin and everything down here, you need to get you a QR code and scan, they can tip you in Bitcoin. You know, you put that on your umbrella, but woohoo! You want to get, you know, Bitcoin accepted and on the beach and the vendors and the hat sellers. There, you just start giving them some Bitcoin, teach them how to do it, or giving them paper wallets to where they can go and, you know, get it cashed in. And all of a sudden, you got an economy.
Yeah.
Well, that bypasses the banks, that bypasses all kinds of stuff, and of course they love getting, you know, dollars, you know, but there's many different ways that you can be free without permission, without the government, and cryptocurrencies is such a good example, and I'm wondering, that might be some way we can help you, because we got contacts in Mexico City for this,
you know? Yeah, you know, I think that the new generations have this opportunity to change a little bit their way of think, and yeah, use these kind of tools to improve our economy and to make to have more resources to be a free country, not just the government, not blame the government, but work together like the new generations.
Well, are you looking, is there some government agency you're trying to influence? You going to school boards like Yasix is talking about? Or are you doing, or are you just, yeah, screw that. We're just bypass. But when you're successful, there's always somebody there wanting their cut.
Yeah.
You know, and so it has to be almost clandestine or shipped from America or something. I mean, you got to, it's online, or you're doing, you know, the classes. Or I mean, there's got to be some way that I want to help. You know, we'll talk some more. You know, I want to help. Because is there some idea or project? Tell us about how your project manifests itself.
Well, right now we are working with some of the most popular universities in Mexico, and we are giving information for the students right now. And the students are making their own projects in their universities. So that's how it works. We give them the way to promote the ideas, we make the publicity, we help them with the planning of these events, and they are working in their own universities. And, you know, that's how this can grow up, because if we have connections with other universities in other states of Mexico, we are going to have a new generation that have different ideas, that can express these ideas of liberty and, yeah. I think that that's a way. That's a way, because you know, when you are a student, I think that is one of the most important parts of your life, because you start to know what do you think and what are you going to do the rest of your life.
You know, I'm encouraged by all you guys. I've always offered this to everyone. You know, anyone that comes and they're doing this, I'm going, let me know what we can do to help. We got some resource. We got something. We know somebody or something. You know, Yasik knows a bunch of people now. You know, before, you know, like with Glenn, there's always, my daughter went to Europe. She, high school, you know, she gets out her senior year, she goes to Europe. I'm calling a bunch of people I know around Europe, and hey, my daughter, she gets in trouble, I'm getting your phone number, you take care of, right? And they go, not a problem. You know, a guy owns a hotel, a guy that owns a business here, a shipping company, whatever. You know, give me a call, she's taking care. I felt a lot better because I wasn't there. There's contacts now that you're making around the world, or people that knows, and our secret power of Captain Mark, you know, he knows a guy. He knows a guy. So this is our gal. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and pull up the Philosophy of Liberty, and this is a perfect example of this. It is in various languages. It's like 100-something languages. We had it translated into Arabic by a guy that got paid $1,000 in Moscow to, you know, translate it for us. Now, what happens is, this is a perfect example of why it's the language of liberty. And that's, Philosophy of Liberty. Now, I have someone from Poland, some from Russia, Ukraine, someone from Mexico. Well, we got to watch it four times, you know? No, they speak English. They read English. This is the point, the language of liberty. All right, so we'll go ahead and do that when we finish up here. And I just wanted to, you know, give Yasik an opportunity to, you know, give his spiel, and we'll get the other guys on in a couple of weeks. And then let everybody else say goodbye and do their final here. But Yasik, help me out, man. You know, what do you think came out of the day? What should we all take from this?
What's the plan for today?
No, I mean, what did we get out of it? I mean, what's the common thread here?
Well, you can see that these young people, young leaders, they all want to change something in their own countries towards more freedom, towards more opportunity, towards better lives, to change lives of the people into better. And they take different paths. They have different talents. Like Maria, she's a journalist, so she'll be influencing people through her writing, through videos that she edits. She's actually very talented in doing this. She's also great in social media. So she uses all these possible channels and methods of influence to spread good messages, to spread ideas of liberty. You heard Andrea. She is with Project Guelam. She's also with Students for Liberty, and she's empowering young people, students at various universities in Mexico, especially in the area of entrepreneurship. She's promoting entrepreneurship in Mexico, and I think that's perfect, because by having your own business, you become more free person and you understand world better. You understand government particularly better, because they go after you, right? And you need to be smart to be one step ahead of them, right? So, and we have Chris. Chris teaches free market basically in high schools in Poland, but he also started his own project. This is his original concept. This lessons of free market economics for Catholics. So he find different audiences. You talk a little bit different to different audiences. He knows about it. He talks to these Catholic activists in his parish, and he wants to expand this project to different parishes. Maybe he can get some help for his own project. And he will be continuing, I'm sure, the project in the high schools as well. And he didn't tell you, but he's writing a book. Well, it's going to be his master's dissertation first about Japan, the liberty in history and culture of Japan. The theme of liberty in Japanese history and culture. Very, very interesting. I think it's going to be a first publication about that. Maybe I'm wrong, but this is certainly not very popular thing. And I want to mention once again about Andrea, because that was not said publicly in this show, but she's also writing a novel with libertarian theme. And this is going to be finished when, Andrea?
Probably at the end of July.
Well, what's it about?
So this
what's
year,
the title? Tell me.
It's still a secret, but
secret title.
Yeah, secret title. But you know, there are going to be short novels for students from high school or elementary school to understand better these ideas.
So, it's a novel to kind of introduce them to the concept and so on. See, a lot of that, you know, we have a lot of friends that write books that are they'll use like. Pirates of Savannah, you know, is about the pirate culture in Georgia, you know, and how it introduced into libertarian philosophy. Zombie books, Survivor Max, little kids surviving the zombie apocalypse, is really all about libertarianism. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of different ways to do this, and we've, you know, emphasized a lot of these publications because we're going, this is so fun and so cool. You know, there's a lot of ways to do it. All right. Well, I want to go ahead and give the other two opportunity to say goodbye. Maria, go ahead, you know, just grab that microphone and, you know, whatever you wanted to comment on, and we'll wrap it up.
Okay, so just visit Ukraine, at least safe parts. It's very nice still. And, like, travel
more. The safe
more.
Parts. You just got to know where the safe parts are.
Lviv.
All parts of Ukraine, like 80% of it is safe. And also travel. The more you travel, the more you know.
All right, very cool. All right, go ahead. Chris, whatever.
So, when you visit Poland, let me know, let us know, and we'll arrange some meeting. there is a contact information to you, right?
Yeah,
I'll leave you my contact information and we'll
put it into the show notes. So anybody listening to this, they'll have it on the page and they got access, you know, through Jacek and so on. So we
Friends of Liberty needs to connect and need to really be good friends. And last word from me, remember that liberty is not what's around you. Liberty is what's inside you.
Boom! Best way to leave it. Now I'm going to introduce them to some of the stuff that we can do for them so that they go, damn, I did not know that. And then we'll have some fun. Worldwide Pirates, man, it's all good. Peace!